Our message tonight is out of Nehemiah chapter 6, verses 15 to chapter 7, verse 4, handling group immature ungodliness with personal vigilance. A tough challenge a leader can face is immature ungodliness in his subordinates. If they fail to discern an evil the leader knows threatens them, the subordinates may not heed the leader if he strongly warns of the danger. So he has to go the extra mile to protect and to have protective insight by taking excessive personal action himself. It's much like a two-year-old child who's playing on the railroad tracks and the parent spies the child, and you've got a train that's bearing down 100 yards away, and all of a sudden the train blows the whistle and the two-year-old child freezes. He doesn't know what to do because he's scared stiff. In a situation like that, you can't coax the child off the track. The parent has to make a wild dash, pick the child up and carry him off the track. So the parent has to go the extra mile. Well, sometimes leaders have to do that with subordinates, sometimes in a group setting. It could be in a business, could be a church, could be a family situation. And that's why we need wisdom. I'd like to read the passage and then we'll look at it and see what God did in Nehemiah's life, because Nehemiah skillfully exemplified how to handle this kind of a situation. In Nehemiah chapter 6, verse 15 to 7, 4. I'll start reading. Chapter 6, verse 15. So the wall was finished in the 25th day of the month Elul in 52 days. And it came to pass that when all our enemies heard thereof, and all the Gentiles that were about us saw these things, they were much cast down in their own eyes, or they were discouraged. For they perceived that this work was wrought of our God. Moreover, in those days, the nobles of Judah sent many letters unto Tobiah, and the letters of Tobiah came unto them. For there were many in Judah who were sworn unto him, because he was the son-in-law of Shechaniah the son of Ara, and his son Johanan had taken the daughter of Meshullam the son of Berechiah. Also they reported his good deeds before me and uttered my words to him. And Tobiah sent letters to put me in fear. Now it came to pass when the wall had been built and I had set up the doors and the porters and the singers and the Levites were appointed, that I gave my brother Hanani and Hananiah, the ruler of the palace, charge over Jerusalem. For he, that's Hananiah, was a faithful man and feared God above most or many. And I said unto them, let not the gates of Jerusalem be open until the sun be hot. And while they stand by, let them shut the doors and bar them, and appoint watches of the inhabitants of Jerusalem, everyone in his watch, and everyone to be over against his house. Now the city was large and great, and the people were few in number, and the houses were not yet built. Okay, what's going on here? Nehemiah chapter 6, verse 15, reports that the city wall was rebuilt in 52 days. And now this would have been a huge achievement, given the great opposition that was faced, the limited untrained laborers who performed the work, and the destroyed walls materials used to accomplish this work. It was a phenomenal feat for these people and for Nehemiah to have achieved this. Indeed, so great was the accomplishment that Israel's foes, who had tried to combat their effort at every turn, suffered a great loss of self-confidence, realizing that they were fighting a losing battle and opposing God, who had obviously been with the wall builders. Well, what made this accomplishment even greater was the huge personal battle that Nehemiah had faced in regard to the immature ungodliness of some of the Hebrews who worked with him, and how this challenge had put him and the workers on the wall in constant and grave danger. This comes out in verses 17 to 19 of Nehemiah chapter 6. For example, Tobiah, one of Nehemiah's foes, a man who had scorned the wall-building effort back in chapter 2, verses 10 and 19, who had ridiculed the work in Nehemiah 4:3, who had conspired to attack the wall builders in Nehemiah 4:7 and 8, who had tried to lure Nehemiah away from the wall to kill him or to attack his co-workers in Nehemiah 6:1-4, and who had treacherously tried to manipulate Nehemiah to enter the temple so that he would dishonor himself in Nehemiah 6:10-14, he had corresponded extensively with Judah's nobles during the wall-building effort. Verse 17, moreover, in those days, the nobles of Judah sent many letters to Tobiah, and the letters of Tobiah came unto them. Now, at this point, we might stop and say, wait a minute, isn't Tobiah one of the bad guys? Tobiah, Sanballat, Geshem, what's going on here? Well, what's going on is that this man Tobiah, even though he's an Ammonite, he's related to these people by way of marriage very extensively. And so this is extended family. And that's a real problem for Nehemiah because he's over a barrel. He can't take a firm stand against Tobiah because a lot of these people are going to think that he's being too strict and they'll probably leave off helping him with the work. And it will create division in the people of Israel. So this is really something. This correspondence arose from the ties that Tobiah had with those who helped Nehemiah. Many workers helping Nehemiah were loyal to Tobiah because he was the son-in-law of Shechaniah, the son of Ara. And Ara is named in the Hebrew genealogy of Ezra chapter 2, verse 5. This is one of the main men who came back from the land of Persia, is the returned exiles. So he's related to them by marriage. Now the Jews were not supposed to marry people like this. This is one of the problems when they have intermarriage with people who are Gentiles, and Tobiah was an Arab and so forth. You have some problems. Now, many of the workers were loyal to Tobiah, as his daughter-in-law was the daughter of Meshulam, who was a son of Berechiah. And Berechiah worked on two different parts of the wall. If you go back to Nehemiah chapter 3, verse 4, you'll see one part of the wall. Verse 4, next unto them repaired Meremoth, the son of Urijah, the son of Koz, and next unto them repaired Meshulam, the son of Berechiah, the son of Meshezabel. Next to them repaired Zadok, the son of Baana. So that's one part of the wall. Another part of the wall in verse 30 of Nehemiah chapter 3. After him repaired Hananiah, the son of Shemaliah, and Hanan, the sixth son of Zaloph, another piece. And after him repaired Meshulam. There he is again, the son of Berechiah, over against his chamber. So this Meshulam fellow was in two different places of the wall. And so this is a threat. If Meshulam decided to turn the tables on Nehemiah because he took a firm stand against Tobiah, they're going to have a problem with two important parts of the wall. So you have a real problem here. These ties led many of Tobiah's Hebrew supporters to ignore his efforts to hurt the wall-building effort by ridicule, by threat of military force, by luring to kill, or by treacherously trying to get Nehemiah to discredit himself. So they told Nehemiah of Tobiah's good deeds while reporting Nehemiah's responses to these to Tobiah, and Tobiah would send letters to Nehemiah to intimidate him based on this inside information that was gleaned from those reports of Nehemiah's responses to him. You see what's going on? There's a lot of intrigue. Verse 19, also, they reported his good deeds before me, and they uttered my words to him. They would report the good deeds of Tobiah to Nehemiah. And if Nehemiah responded to them, every word that he said was reported through these people back to Tobiah. That gave inside information to Tobiah to write letters to try to intimidate him. So Nehemiah had to watch what he said even with his fellow Jews that who were working with him, supposedly helping him on the wall. This is a real tough situation to be in. It's very difficult if you face this. So Nehemiah dealt gently with the immature ungodliness while staying personally vigilant. I think it's remarkable that in this wall-building effort, Nehemiah never took a public stand against Tobiah lest he lose any workers. This helps to explain why when Tobiah and Sanballat would make these threats and so forth, Nehemiah would say, well, I'm doing an important work and I can't leave it. The reason is his words, he knew, would get back from Tobiah or to Tobiah and to the people here. He needed to look just as good in front of the weak people who were with him as he did in front of the enemies. Because these weak people who were with him could have just as soon stopped helping him on the wall, and that became a real threat for the area because he needed all the help that he could get. And sometimes you're in a situation where you've just got to do really good. I'll never forget a number of years ago. This is long before we had the men on the board that we had, and we had some other men on the board, and I was running into some criticism because of the men that we had on the board. They didn't really meet the full qualifications of elder or deacon and everything. And I remember taking them to this passage where Nehemiah actually put Hanani in charge, Hananiah rather, in charge of the palace because it says he feared God above many. I said, well, if you're going to wait around until you have men who are perfectly qualified for a church, we've got a long ways to go. So what do you want? Do you want a church or don't you? And they said, well, of course we want a church, all right. I said, if you want a church, we have to have a board. All right, yeah, we want a board, okay. Then we're going to have to put up with men who aren't quite fully qualified until we get some men who are qualified. Otherwise, you can't have church. We have to make a choice here. We have to live in, we're an imperfect situation. And people just didn't realize. They were expecting everything's got to be perfect. You have to have perfectly mature men, perfectly qualified men. We're not there. That's what I told them. We're not there. So now what do you do? And so Nehemiah knew that. He couldn't even talk to the people openly because they were so weak. They were so influenced by his enemies. So he didn't critique them. Now, this is a real threatening situation. So Nehemiah decided, I'm going to have to take extra steps myself. I'm going to have to go behind the scenes and bend over backwards and just cover the bases myself. And that's what he did. Nehemiah dealt gently with the people. He never took a public stand against Tobiah. But even after the wall had been completed, he set up its gates and appointed gatekeepers, singers, and Levites to the places. He assigned his brother Hanani, who had first told him of Jerusalem's needy state back in Nehemiah chapter 1, 2, and 3. Remember, he was the one, the brother of Nehemiah, relative of Nehemiah, who told him about the fact that the walls are broken down and the gates are burned. And then he also selected Hananiah, the ruler in charge of the fortress that protected the temple and the charge of the city of Jerusalem. For Hananiah was a faithful man and feared the Lord more than many others. Now, it's interesting. He noticed that Hananiah wasn't perfect. He didn't have a complete fear of God, but he was the best that he had. And like I said before, I've used this, you have to go with the best that you got. And sometimes it's not perfection. And that's what he did. And these two men were responsible for helping charge Jerusalem. Now, the weakest link that they had in the city were the gates. If the city gates were opened at the wrong time, the enemy could make a charge and come in. If the city gates were closed, the enemies, they could still eventually break the wall down, but it would alarm everybody else, and then the weak people would recognize these guys are trying to kill us, so maybe we better fight them. So Nehemiah took complete control of the gates, and that would help secure the weakest link, the weakest area of the wall. So Nehemiah charged these two men to open the gates only when the sun was well risen. That means the sun was hot. To defend against a surprise attack from Tobiah and associates, and to shut and lock the gates at night, appointing a guard from those who worked on the wall to guard at posts and near their families. Notice Nehemiah chapter 7, verse 3. He said, "And I said unto them, let not the gates of Jerusalem be open until the sun be hot." Now, there's two reasons for that. You don't want a surprise attack coming from others. But when the sun is hot, everybody in the city is awake. And then you have a maximum force to fight off the enemies that come. If you open the gates when you got still half the city's asleep, the city's weak, and then a lot of people can be slain before they even wake up. So Nehemiah says, no, we're going to wait until the sun is hot, everybody's awake, then we open the gates. So he waited till maybe 8, 9 o'clock in the morning, and the sun was hot, is up. So it cut into a little bit of their business, but he was taking no chances. And while they stand by, let them shut the doors and bar them and appoint watches of the inhabitants of Jerusalem, everyone in his watch and everyone to be over against his house. Some of the people he put watching where the families were located, and some of the men he put in the guard posts over various points around the wall. So he was taking no chances with Tobiah having an in with a lot of the people that were there. He was just covering the bases himself. So this plan was necessary not only because of the continued threat of the enemies and their ties to loyal friends in Jerusalem, but since the large area of the city was sparsely populated and the homes of Jerusalem had not yet been built to provide sufficient shelter in case of an invasion. So verse 4, now the city was large and great, but the people were few therein and the houses were not built. And on top of that, the people who were there, who were weak, they were also, few in number, they were weak. They weren't that committed, because they really didn't believe that Tobiah was that big of an enemy. So you have to be very, very careful, and we have to watch. So in facing immature ungodliness in his subordinates that left them open to grave danger, Nehemiah dealt gently with their immaturity while personally taking extra steps to address the danger. So may we heed Nehemiah's lead to handle immature ungodliness in the needy who are around us. It's interesting, today in the fellowship hall, I had one of our members came to me. He was concerned about a possible doctrinal error that he had heard in someone who is a missionary that we support and so forth. And I said, you know what you need to do? go to the elders, go to one of our board members. I want the men of the church to hear what your concern is. Let them deal with this, because I want the men to see the importance of taking the stand. And so I encouraged him to do that. I said, I'm getting ready to go on vacation, but they're involved in this. So I was very grateful, and I encouraged this person. I said, I am so glad that you are concerned about this, because the beliefs that we have as a church are the formation, are the background, and they are the foundation for what we do. If our beliefs are not strong, then what we do becomes weak. And I want to encourage you in regards to your concern. I'll tell you what I said. If there is no problem, and we clarify this with the missionary would be all too glad to let us know exactly what he believes. I remember we sent letters around to missionaries asking them if they agreed with our statement of faith, and a couple of missionaries came back. They were emphatically yes, and they were all too glad to say, yes, I'm glad for the opportunity to state this. That's what we want to hear. We want to hear that they're of the same faith as we are, because after all, we're supporting them so that they can go out and disciple other people, and we want them to be discipled the proper way. But this means that this is where leaders, and this is a person in our church who has leadership capacities, really need to be careful to watch over the flock of God and to take extra steps to do that which is good. Also, a number of years ago, my hometown, which is Chico, California, there was a pastor of a church, a large church, several thousand people in it. And he was a dear man of God. And one time, I had some relatives share with me that after a church service, one of their mothers got into a discussion with this pastor. And this mother was sharing, she was opening her heart about a problem that she had. And this is a pastor of large church, many people, a lot of people around. He was involved in many committees. But this woman had a special need, and she was opening up to him, so he cut everything else out around him, and he focused on her and talked to her for 20 minutes right there and sought to meet her need. And I believe this is the right thing. He did the right thing. This is an individual who needed his pastoral guidance then. So as far as he was concerned, the board could wait. The rest of the congregation could wait. They didn't have this need. This elderly woman did. And he focused on her, and he ministered. And he was going the extra mile because he recognized this is a person who needed help. And he had a job to do as a spiritual guide and as a protector. And I never forgot that. And when I learned about that. And that man no longer, he's retired out of the ministry and so forth. But he was very effective. He had a television ministry and so forth. He was a good man. But he always saw the importance of the individual. And he would focus on the individual in his presence who had that need. And he would never forget that. Nehemiah was that way too. He saw the weakness of the people that was around him. He saw their weaknesses. He saw their lack of sensitivity to their own danger. So he had to cover for them by taking the extra step. That's what we have to do. Sometimes we have to treat and we have to protect people around us as though everybody who is around us in the group, sometimes it's a business, sometimes it's a family, sometimes a church, we have to pretend they're all 2 and 3 years of age. They just need someone to go the extra mile. And God help us to do that and be sensitive to that so that we can indeed be useful to the Lord in helping those who are weak.